Broadcasting live from the Business Radio X studios in Atlanta, Georgia, it's time for Trade Show Radio.
All right, Lee Cantor and Stone Payton here for Trade Show Radio, the place to go when you want to learn everything about the world of trade shows. How you doing, Stone?
Good afternoon, sir. I am doing well. This is a little bit of shifting gears for us. Most of the time when we're doing Trade Show Radio, we're actually in the booth on the behalf of an organizer or an exhibitor and conducting live radio right there on the spot. But now we're going to shift gears and get some thought leadership and some good input on how to conduct an effective trade show. So this is going to be a lot of fun.
Absolutely. You know, I was getting tired of answering all the questions about trade shows. And we said, let's go to the source, the people who are out there doing the work, helping clients, and get some best practices and some key learnings from the people that are out there. Who do we have today?
Well, this is going to be a fantastic segment. We have with us, with Demand Metric, Mr. Jerry Rackley. Welcome to the show, man.
Well, thanks, Lee and Stone. Glad to be here.
Well, we are delighted to have you. How about giving us a quick overview thumbnail sketch, if you would? Mission and purpose, what are you out there trying to do for folks, and who exactly is your market? Who are you trying to serve?
Well, I'm glad you asked. Demand Metric is a marketing advisory firm, and we serve marketing professionals. And we launched our company about 7 years ago. Initially, we provided all kinds of tools and templates to help marketing professionals do all the things they do, everything from market segmentation to job descriptions to assessments of various kinds. And I should add, I would invite our listeners to visit the Demand Metric website because we have several tools that are very specific to trade shows. So we work with clients and members, and they come to us looking for help, advice, and tools on things related to marketing, and that certainly does include trade shows.
Now, when you're working with a client that maybe hasn't done a trade show before, is there some basics that you share with them?
Sure. I mean, it's always helpful to have some kind of frame of reference and understand what really should you expect. And I think the first question ought to be, does it even make sense? Does a trade show make sense for me? I thought I'd share some data because it just so happens that right now Demand Metric is doing some research. And we're doing a study, part of which asked the question about, we're polling marketing professionals. And one of the questions we asked in a survey that we've got running right now is, which of the following marketing mediums have been most effective for you? A majority of the people responding to this survey are in the B2B world of business. And the top four things they responded with that said are most effective, the first is email. The second is social media. The third is word of mouth. And the fourth are trade shows. And they all rank pretty high. And after that, I start to see a drop off. So number one, trade shows are still very relevant. And so people come and say, do trade shows still make sense? And the answer is they absolutely do make sense. And so that's one of the first pieces of advice we like to give them. And so the second thing they tend to want to talk about is, well, then how do I know which trade shows to go to? Because there's a lot of them. And there are. The Center for Exhibition Industry Research publishes some studies and numbers, but I think the last figure I saw, there's at least 10,000 B2B events in the U.S. every year. So quite simply, what we say is you need to find out where your prospects and customers are going and plan to be there as well. And sometimes that's not quite so easy for them to do. So another piece of advice we give them is, well, another thing you should do is look at where your competitors are going, because if they've been doing trade shows longer than you, they may know something that you don't.
Now, is it possible for a small company to, compete in the trade show world against some of these bigger players? Like, in, I think the size is 10 by 10 booth of most, you know, kind of the entry-level booth. Is it possible to make a splash in that kind of a space when you have competitors that are taking over, you know, whole corners or whole, chunks of the trade show floor?
Sure. That is a great question. And the answer is yes, it is possible. And one way to think about it is this. What kind of splash do you make if you're not there at all? And the answer is, of course,
not
an
much.
Excellent point.
That's right. I mean, you can't make any splash at all if you're not there. And I recognize that what's behind the question like that is, if you do walk into some of these shows, there typically is one of the great big sponsors of the event or one of the big industry giants. And they have the largest booth that's usually in the center of the floor, and they've spent the most money and have the biggest space. And that can be a little bit intimidating. But here's what I would tell someone who has a concern about whether they can even compete with that kind of presence. Everyone, and I'll give you just a backdrop. I've spent a lot of time at various technology shows, and so when I was doing lots of shows for the companies I work for, Microsoft, everyone's heard of Microsoft, and
sure,
that's what they do. They were a very significant presence at a lot of shows. But they're expected to be. You expect a company like Microsoft to be there. In fact, it'd be a bigger surprise if they weren't. What I think attendees really kind of delight in finding is walking into these shows and looking around and discovering some of the smaller players that perhaps they hadn't known about. They already knew about Microsoft. They know what Microsoft does. They'll go by the Microsoft booth, and they'll get all the swag that's being given away. But when it comes to real value of learning, and that's what the attendees will tell you they're there for, they're not there to find cool things to take home to their kids. They're there to learn. And they really relish the opportunity to discover resources and vendors and solutions they didn't know about previously. So that's why it does make sense, and it is possible to compete. But as I say that, I would also add, you have to do more than just show up and stand in a booth.
So what should you really be trying to accomplish with them once they do come to the booth? And the reason I'm asking is I've been to some booths where it felt like they were trying to conduct their entire sales cycle with me right there on the floor with all the noise and craziness. And I just got the sense that maybe they were pushing things along a little faster than made sense for the product and service we were talking about. Have you ever had that experience?
Well, sure. I think I'll even be honest and say there's probably a time in my career where I've been guilty of trying to do that.
Maybe it was you.
No. But I've learned since then. The thing that you have to keep in mind is, one is the attention span of the attendees. And so your question, I think, was, what are you trying to accomplish? And before you even set foot on the show floor, you have to have an objective defined. Now, for most companies that decide they're going to dip their toe in the trade show marketing pool, the objective is lead generation. And I think that's more so true for smaller companies. They're interested in going and identifying prospects to do business with and coming away from a show with a hopefully long list of leads. And that is a great objective for a show. That isn't the only objective, but I would say for a smaller company, that's probably the most common and perhaps the best one. Companies like Microsoft that I used earlier as an example, sure, they like the leads as well, but the bigger the company, the more likely it is they're there to sort of fly the company flag, to have a strong branded presence and just reinforce the brand. So I think to answer your question, number one, have an objective. So let's say that it is lead generation. You have to then build your whole process. As I said, you can't just walk onto the show floor and stand in a booth and expect magic things to happen. So you've got to understand who the attendees are, how much time that you can reasonably expect to spend with them, and it typically isn't long enough to take them through the full sales cycle.
So when you're working with a client, now what's the sweet spot for you for a client? Are they more the Microsofts, or are they more the small to mid-sized companies?
For us, it's the small to medium-sized enterprises. There's not anything that's industry-specific, although more of our members do happen to be B2B.
Now, do you ever have conversations like, well, in this show, we need a good stress ball? Or, you know what, let's do a fishbowl with an iPad giveaway. Like, are those the conversations you have?
Yes, actually. In fact, we do strategize around very specific things like that. And it's funny you bring up the stress ball. I kind of have a pet peeve when it comes to promotional items, and there's sort of this lowest common denominator of promotional items that you see, and you can get plenty of pins and stress balls and branded post-it notepads when you go to a trade show. So if you're short on office supplies, my advice is to go to a trade show and get it back, and you get plenty of that. But I mean, let me just tell you one story, because I think promotional items actually are very important because they do pull people into the booth. And if you could work it exactly the way you want it to, you would want to have a promotional item that has some real perceived value. And here's a better way to say it. You want a promotional item when someone has walked away from your booth and they're holding it in their hand and maybe showing it off to their friends. Everyone who sees it is saying, where did you get that? So you'd like to have it sort of to create gravity to your booth by having a good promotional item. And you can do that without spending a ton of money. So you want promotional items to work for you, and that's one thing you want them to do. The second thing is you want them to be branded. And I know that sounds like it's obvious, but I worked with a company one time who they were going to a show for dentists and dental professionals. And they were delighted they had found a promotional item. It was a tooth-shaped stress ball. It looked like a molar.
Right.
And it was, you know, made out of the foam. And I thought, this is perfect. You know, what a perfect tie-in to the show. So they showed it to me. They were very proud of it. And I took a look at it, and it had their logo on it. And that was it. And they were not a well-known company. And so I asked them, I said, okay, what's going to happen when someone who has this gets home from the show and they pull this stress tooth out of their bag and they look at it? Are they going to remember who you are from your logo? Well, I thought, well, maybe not. Okay, great. So they're not necessarily going to remember you. How then, using this stress tooth, are they going to contact you? And there was no website. There was no phone number. There was no email. And so I always counsel everybody, if you're going to give stuff away, make sure it's not only branded, but it has your contact information.
Right. Now, when you're working with companies and maybe over the course of the lifetime with that client, you're going to more, you know, maybe the same show more than one time. Is it important to, like, come up with fresh new ideas, you know, different stuff so you stand out, or do you just go with the what got you there kind of strategy?
Well, I think it probably leans toward, you know, go with fresh and creative ideas, because we've got to remember what we're trying to accomplish at a show. When you go to one, it's not like you're the new kid in school on the first day of school, where you just want to kind of slink down in your chair and blend in. You want to do quite the opposite. You want to stand out. And so you use every available option at your disposal to really stand out. And that includes the way your booth looks and the signage. It includes the way you're dressed. It certainly includes the promotional items that we talk about. And the other things you do creatively, whether you do some in-booth entertainment or have some sort of promotional premium giveaway or some combination of those things. So you want to figure out how to really take advantage of the money you're spending to be there to get the maximum return, and that return comes from having lots of people come by your booth, lots of engagement. That's what you're trying to get.
So is there some sort of general rule of thumb, some sort of equation for return on investment? If I invest $10,000, $15,000 in a show, I should expect X percent return, and if I'm not getting it, I really ought to revisit what we're doing, or does that vary a lot by industry?
It probably does vary a lot by industry, but you're asking an excellent question, because everyone who does trade shows or any other marketing promotion should track and measure their results. So let's just go back to the lead generation objective, since that's the primary objective most people have for a show. You have the ability to track cost per qualified lead. And I realize there's all kinds of variations of that metric, but let's just go with that one because that's a good one. You can add up all your costs. You can then evaluate all the leads that you bring home from a show. You probably don't want to just do the division based on every lead you brought home. You probably want to go and apply some sort of, you know, filter and say, okay, obviously this person here, they're not a prospect for us for whatever reasons. And so you sort of separate the wheat from the chaff.
Yeah, I keep the good ones and I give the rest of them to Lee. That's what I do.
Sorry, what?
I keep the good leads and I give the rest of them to Lee. That's my filter.
you cherry pick.
Exactly. Go ahead.
And that happens a lot too.
So now, you have all the leads, you've kind of discerned these are the good ones, these are the not so good ones, And then do you kind of give it a point system? Because you know how some people are just going by booths and they're throwing their business card in to get the goodie or to, you know, try to win a prize or whatever the thing is, and they may not really care about your product at all. But somebody you sat down and had a substantive conversation with for 10 minutes, you have to give them kind of more points if you were keeping score, wouldn't you?
Right, and lead scoring is really a great thing to do, and you're exactly right about it. If you have a substantial conversation with someone and they've expressed they have a need and they're qualified, and maybe they have money in the budget, then absolutely they're going to score really high. You're not going to have the opportunity to do all of that scoring sort of on the fly at the show. And that's why you have to have a process. And I think what people sometimes forget is that participation in a show begins long before the show ever occurs, and it continues well after the show ends. And so the kind of stuff you're talking about right now, all the lead scoring and the qualification and just handling all those leads and that passing them off to a sales team or sales function, that ought to be part of a process that's defined with standards and not something that's just left sort of haphazardly. I think too often what we see going on is a company goes to a show, they bring home, we'll say just for nice round numbers, they bring home 1,000 leads, but the sales team is really excited about the 25 conversations they had. And so all their focus goes on to those 25 people. They spend all their time there. The other, you know, 975 sort of get forgotten about. And everyone gets too busy to do anything with them after they get back from the show because it's business as usual again. And we don't recommend that either, because you're not getting the full return on the money you spent to get those leads.
Right, and that, it's like you said before, if you have a really good system to process all the interactions, then nobody's going to slip through the cracks like that.
Exactly, and you have to have that process defined before you go to the show. And we see the companies that are using tools like marketing automation and CRM typically doing the best job of having a good process and running those leads through.
So what's your take on, I call it walking the carpet, but investing a little time outside the booth and visiting other people's booths, there's some real merit in that for most people as well, isn't there?
There's a lot of merit to it, because I think it recognizes that not all the goodness that can come out of a show occurs in your booth. You got to remember that your booth is not the center ring of the trade show circuit. There's lots of things happening. And so some of the things you can learn by getting out of your booth would include identifying partners. As you walk around, you discover companies you didn't know existed, and there's lots of points of intersection, so partnerships can develop. The other thing I've always been surprised about is how easy it is to do competitive intelligence gathering. When you go to these shows, most of the time your major competitors are there with you. And you all know each other. You may not have physically met each other, but you certainly recognize each other as competitors. And I've had lots of situations at shows where I have gone up to a competitor's booth and just said hi and just started a conversation. And it is amazing the kind of things that will come out of that conversation in terms of intelligence. In fact, what I've even done is I've taken a set of our marketing literature and I've just gone over and handed it to a competitor and said, look, I thought you... You know, we would love to have yours, but we're going to give you ours, and those things spawn interesting conversations. So that happens as well. The other thing that you shouldn't overlook is that many times the media are present at these trade shows, and if you operate on the assumption that they're going to wander by your booth and stop and interview and turn that into a story, you're sadly mistaken most of the time. So you should figure out if they're there and where they are and go seek them out. So there's all kinds of things you can do like that. And a fourth thing I would say is there's probably a pretty good chance some of your customers are at this show. So why not take the advantage of the opportunity to go entertain them? Take them out to a dinner or do something fun with customers just to say thank you.
Now, when you're counseling your clients regarding this stuff, is there a resource you send them to identify the trade shows that are relevant to them, or part of your counsel is you seek them out on their behalf?
Well, there's not a single resource, but there's kind of a strategy we will recommend. So it depends on the business. Most organizations, they'll have some sort of a nonprofit professional association that is associated with the company. So, for example, I mentioned earlier, a dental trade show. Well, if you happen to be a supplier to, healthcare or dental, there's all kinds of medical and dental organizations that you need to go study, because they all have conferences and trade shows. Most of them do. Some of them are national and some of them are local. And so that's probably the first piece of advice we give, is go seek out the associations, the professional associations that your customers belong to, and find out if they have a trade show, because most of the time they do. And we not only encourage them to be at the show and exhibit, but if you plan far enough ahead, sometimes there's opportunities to present or to speak or to sponsor something and create even greater visibility. So that's probably the most important piece of advice that we give. The other thing we would say is, if you can't find anything there, then go look on your competitors' websites and look to see what events they've signed up to go exhibit at and attend, and see if it makes sense for you to be there too. So those are two strategies we recommend frequently.
Well, Jerry, it has been an absolute delight having you on the show. Before we wrap, a couple of things. I wonder if you could walk us through, if you will, very briefly, how it works, engaging you guys. Maybe walk us through your engagement cycle a little bit and help us understand what that is like. And then I want to make sure that our listeners have your contact information so they can reach out and have a substantive conversation about this with you at their leisure. But let's start with, how does it work? If we were going to start working together now, lay that out for us a little bit.
Sure. Well, most of the time, the people we work with find us because they are out on the web looking for a resource. So, for example, they might type in trade show ROI calculator. And if they type that in Google, we would probably come up in the search results. And so they find us that way. A great way to engage us in dialogue and just have a conversation with us is by visiting our website. We have all kinds of tools for contacting us on our website. I'm happy to share my email address. And we also are on LinkedIn. We're on Twitter. We're on Facebook. So we utilize social media. And any of those ways are appropriate to contact us. And if someone has an interest in working with us to learn how to be more effective at using trade shows or any other marketing channel, we're happy to have a conversation with them about that.
Outstanding. Well, let's give them the website address, your email address, and we'll make sure when we will go back in, we will post this show on the Trade Show Radio website. We'll make sure that there's links to you and your organization so we can get you connected with the folks that could use your service.
Great. I appreciate the opportunity. Our website is www.demandmetric.com, and my email address is Jerry, and that's spelled with a J, Jerry@demandmetric.com.
Well, I got to tell you, Lee, that's some of the most informative 15 or 20 minutes I've had in a long time. I think it would be fun. Jerry, we got to have you back sometime. And I'm thinking maybe with a client, coming off of a trade show and having worked with you to prepare for it. I think that could be a fun conversation and get their perspective sometime as well.
Well, I'd love to come back and talk to you again.
All right.
Well, thank you so much.
It's been a pleasure. Thanks.
All righty. Goodbye.
All right. Well, that was great information.
Well, it was. That guy knows his stuff. I mean, you could tell that he didn't just sit down and write a book. He's been in there. He's been working these trade shows. He's been helping people prepare for them, helping them understand what to do on the backside. And you knew by the name of his company, Demand Metric, that he was going to be focused on return on investment and really getting at those numbers.
Right.
And not just, throwing money at stress balls.
And hoping.
You know what? I'll bet you my last dollar this next fellow probably has a good head on his shoulders and has something to offer as well.
He wrote a book, so you know he did.
Well, there you go. So please join me in welcoming to the show from Social Tech Media, Mr. Richard Bliss. You with us, Richard?
I'm here. Gentlemen, thank you for having me.
Well, we are delighted to have you. Got to tell you, man, you got a hard act to follow. This last fella, Jerry Rackley, it really was a fun conversation, and he knew a lot, but we have high hopes for this conversation as well.
No pressure.
So now you just wrote a book, Stealing the Show, and it's, can you share a little bit about what it's about?
It's called Stealing the Show, and one of the ideas is that over the years, my 22 years in the marketing for software companies, picked up a few tips and tricks on how to leverage, sometimes you don't have a lot of money, go into a big show, and how to turn any event you go to into your own. Basically steal the show, whether it's your event or somebody else's, and then you basically just learn some of those tips and tricks, and so that's what I've got in there.
So what's your backstory, Richard? How did you fall into this line of work?
You know, I've been in marketing for a long time, kind of been out there working for a series of smaller companies through since the 90s, late 80s, mid 90s. And that was, you know, the dot-com was ramping up. There was all kinds of money being spent. And I worked for a series of smaller companies, and we just had to get creative. And kind of the story is I had a technical background. We were a startup. This is the early 90s, and everybody sat around the table, and they said, who's going to do our marketing? Richard owns a tie. Let's let him do marketing.
Really, that's all it takes.
That's all it took. So there you go. That's kind of how I stumbled into it.
So now, over the years, you've probably done you've been to quite a few shows, and it sounds like you've ambushed quite a few shows in your day as well. You want to share?
Yeah, we try not to use that term too much because it has such a negative connotation, but that's exactly what it is, ambush marketing.
Okay, guerrilla marketing, whatever you want to say. What are some of your funny stories about how you've been able to get more bang for your buck? Let's put it that way.
You know, let's start off with probably one of my best stories. We won't even save it for last. Several years ago, big technology trade show in Las Vegas. 100, 150,000 people show up. And I went one year, and I spent probably $10,000 at the time, and I'm on the backside of somebody else's booth on one of the sub halls way, and maybe 10 people came by, and I spent basically $1,000 a person. And the next year when I got ready to go back to Las Vegas, I stopped and thought to myself, this is not going to work. And I still had a small budget. I was working for a small technology company out of Dayton, Ohio. And so we came up with a different idea. I realized that at a show that big, my audience wasn't going to reach enough people to randomly walk by, but I could reach out to another subset of that network, of that group, that would be much more interested to talk to me. So what I did, created a postcard, and on the front of the postcard, I put a picture of one of those military-grade Hummers.
Right?
And it said, let me take you for a ride. You flipped it over. And it had my cell phone and my cell phone number on this postcard, and it had an email, had a letter from me that said, "Look, when you come to this trade show, your time is more valuable than anything. So rather than standing in a two-hour cab line, here's my cell phone number. I will dispatch a military-grade Hummer to your location anywhere you are and take you anywhere you want to go."
That rocks.
The whole week while you're in Las Vegas. The only caveat is you have to listen to why my company is such a cool company, and you have to talk to me. So flew most of the company out to Las Vegas. We rented 10 Hummers, put my admin in a hotel room with a cell phone and a bank of two-way radios, and I got 680 press and analysts who I had sent the postcard to call me and let me take them for a ride in Las Vegas. And in exchange, they listened to a 10-minute briefing on my company about why my company was so cool. I spent about the same amount of money I had spent the year before, but this time I talked to nearly every single press and analyst that was at that show. And I did it by targeting the audience that had the influence rather than randomly trying to find a customer to walk by my booth.
Good stuff. So was the client, was that successful? Or you got a lot of attention. Did it turn into money?
It did, because what happened was those people wrote about me. They talked about me, and to this day, this has been a long time ago, to this day, sometimes when I reach out to a press person or an analyst person, they'll say, oh, yeah, you're that Hummer guy from Las Vegas, which I don't think is necessarily a great thing for people to overhear you being accused of, but that's what it was. And to this day, it's still people talk about it, and it generated active awareness where I needed now people to know who I was. They knew who I was.
So you must see a lot of some of the same mistakes over and over. When you're going to these shows, you're walking the carpet, and you just almost to the point where you look over there and you roll your eyes. What are some patterns you see, some of the mistakes that you see over and over that some of us neophytes maybe could avoid without all the heartache?
Well, I've heard your sign-off a few times when you talk about, you know, the stress. The last thing we need is another stress toy.
Right.
Right? And I've heard you refer to that several times. That thinking about, I call them landfill toys. And we had, you know, we came up with a rule years ago with the companies I work for, the clients that I adopted, is don't give away anything that's going to end up in a kid's toy box. Because that's not your target audience. And if you're going to spend all that money simply to have the parent say, hey, can I have three? I got three kids. Right? Then you know you've done it wrong. And so there's a couple of ways then to target that. One is to go something incredibly creative. For example, we once had transparent mice that had our logo floating in a combination of water and oil, with the oil colored to our logo company colors, and our logo floating in between, you know, sinking in the water but floating in the oil.
Right.
And we'd walk, you know, one of my sales guys would walk into a customer who, or a potential customer, and they'd see that mouse sitting on that person's desk, and it, you know, they'd keep it for years because that was just a cool thing. Find that cool factor rather than the stress ball thing. And here's a way to do that. And this is where stealing the show comes into play. You can hijack almost any event you go to. And one way to do it is to get allies. Look at who's coming to the show. Go contact a few non-competitors and say, look, I'm going to build my own traffic builder. And we know what a traffic builder is, right? That's where if you go and visit these spots, get a stamp, come back, you'll be entered in for a drawing.
Right.
Well, okay, but how much money can you spend? I went to a Microsoft show once, and everybody was doing traffic builders, and everybody was giving away the exact same thing, an Xbox. Partly is because Microsoft didn't want you giving away Apple products.
Right, they didn't want you giving away an iPad, right.
An Xbox.
Yeah.
So everybody at the show is giving away an Xbox. Said, no, that's not going to work. So I gave away the Sword of Aragorn.
Nice.
You know what I'm talking about, right?
Yeah, I do know what you're talking about.
The replica, the 4-foot real sword. There were security concerns when we had it, so we had to encase it in a glass case in our booth. Everybody was talking about it. And then what I did is I was able to – so that was one example. Another example, we gave away, you know, flat panel TVs. Well, I've only got a little bit of money. So I'd go to these other vendors and say, look, I'm going to drive 500 people to your booth because I'm going to give away a $2,500 flat panel TV. And if you're willing to spend $500 with me, I'll send them to your booth, and then when we give it away, you'll be part of that giveaway. And that way you're able to get 3, 4, 5 people. It got to the point where some shows I'd go to, I'd raise $30,000 from other vendors that it will allow me to do massive giveaways of, you know, big 40-inch, 50-inch TVs, huge gaming systems, you know, every cool thing that seemed to come out. We were always out there because we could afford it, not because I had the budget, but because I had the network of people. And that's probably one of the biggest things to think about, is that when you go in to steal the show, look for allies, because everybody else is in the same boat you are. And you can spend $1,000 giving away 1,000 $1 things, or you can spend $1,000 and $2,000 of other people's money to give away a $3,000 thing that really drives people to your booth.
Now, how do you get that network? How do you know who's there and who would be open to partnering? How'd you pull that part off?
Really, oftentimes when you become a vendor at a show, they will send you a list of the other vendors.
Mm-hmm.
If they don't, just simply go to the website. You then kind of scroll down and look at your own product or your own service and then think, for example, one of my clients came to me and said she was a – this is how far it can go. She was had moved into an area, was a high-end wedding photographer, wanted to get known in the community by building up this clientele as a high-end wedding photographer because she was in an area where wedding photos were considered fairly a commodity. What does she do? Well, I told her, look, the show's coming up. She says, yeah, I don't even have time for a booth. I said, okay. Do you know who's going to be there? Yep. So go contact the caterer. Go contact the cake person. Go contact the dress. She was the photographer. So go identify a single vendor in each piece of a wedding. Put together your little traffic builder. Print up a little card. and have them all go to each other, and you're going to give away an entire wedding because each piece is being provided by another vendor. And yet, and then the way they enter the drawing, because she didn't have a booth, because she contacted me on a Thursday, and the event was like on Sunday. She had like 3 days. So I said, since you don't have a booth, instead, get a button, fairly big button, and put on you. It says, "Hi, I'm Jen." Her name was Jen. And tell people they have to come find you in order to be entered in for this drawing. So what happened was is that every person who filed into this thing saw that this giveaway was going on to win. You know, who's at a wedding show? People who are probably going to get married.
Right.
And so they all got excited, and then almost every person at that show was trying to find this woman named Jen. And you talk about brand awareness. All the other vendors were thrilled. And this unknown photographer came into this community and immediately established thought leadership amongst all of the other aspects of the wedding environment. She got called up for radio. She got called up for TV, print, because everybody thought this was so cool what she was doing. And then everybody at that show was tracking her down, finding her, and then she would have her picture taken with them for fun and then send it to them. Great marketing to hijack somebody else's event that she didn't even have a booth at.
Yeah, that's a great story. Is anything that you're doing, is it always with these kind of smaller clients, or do you work with larger clients as well?
I'll work with larger clients as well, where there'll be a fairly large company. And the challenge with larger companies is that they're set in their ways. This is how we do it. This is how we've always done it. And so it becomes a little bit more difficult. So what you do is you find one of the teams of a larger company who's looking to set themselves apart a little bit. For example, I had one company I wanted to do. They were doing, back in the day, it was antivirus software, online antivirus software. You know, nowadays we've got so many vendors out there, but this was back when it was kind of a new idea. So we came up with software for your hardware, personal software for your hardware. And what it was condoms with their logo stamped on the packaging.
You got to know your audience. That's
you
a lesson
know your
there,
audience.
Right?
Well, guess what? The company wasn't prepared to publicly do this. And the trade show wasn't prepared to publicly allow it. So, turned into a brilliant marketing opportunity. Mm-hmm. So, what happened was is that we had people in the booth, the small team that was involved with this, stuffed their pockets full of these condoms. And then what would happen was, so they didn't have them in a jar or anything like that. Nobody could see it. And so then what would happen is that they would give them out to some of their contacts. You know, when you go to a show, oftentimes you know so many people at the show. And so they would, because you see some regulars, and they would give them out to a few of their contacts. And then they would say, okay, shh, don't tell anybody I gave this to you. Well, you know what's going to happen.
They're telling everybody.
People start saying, hey, look what I got. You know, look at this cool, you know, forbidden, prohibited little object I got. Pretty soon, people start showing up at the booth. And they'd be like, I'm supposed to come over here and ask you about this thing you've got. And then people would look around. And it'd be like they're dealing drugs. And they would hand out, and then they'd reach into their pocket, hand one, shh, don't tell anybody. Well, then people would notice. You know, other people who are in the booth would like, what's going on over there? And it became one of our most successful campaigns we ever launched because some of the larger entities didn't want us to do it.
Well, you are so
underground thing.
You are so creative, and I can see why people, if they just spend a few moments in a conversation with you, they want to engage you and have you help them think through their trade show strategy. For the rest of us that may not be as creative, I have a question to ask you that comes back from in a former life when I was in the training and development business. We would go to a trade show, but we could only afford one a year, and we would go to a trade show, and everybody on the floor was training and development people. And then after I got fired from that job and went to another training and development company, we could only afford one trade show a year, and we didn't go to that trade show. We went to the tool show, and we were the only dance there. And I just it seemed like a really fresh idea to me. Do you have a take on that for certain industries, that idea of maybe going to those kind of shows where maybe you are a very niche provider compared to everybody else there?
Yes. There's two camps here, and you've brought it up. You know, why, when you go looking for a car, are all the car companies, right, dealerships lined up down Auto Row? Or why are all the restaurants in town along one street? And it's because marketing shows that if somebody's looking for a car, you actually stand a better chance of the zebra mentality, of being part of the herd, so that they'll see you because that's where people are going. And that's the mentality around going to a show where everybody's pre-qualified. Everybody at the show is pre-qualified the moment they walk in the door. That's because you've gone to a show where they're there to learn about what you're saying and what everybody else is saying. And there's a valuable part of that because it allows people to do a lot of their comparison and shopping right there. It can be pretty cutthroat. But this other thing that you're talking about is going where you become remarkable, where suddenly you stand out, where people stop and they're like, what are you guys doing here? For example, one show working for a technology security company, a client, we looked at going to a – and this was – you were talking about this with one of your earlier guests on another show, gaming, right? We've talked about gaming and training and that type of thing. But no, this was a gaming, as in board gaming, video gaming, one of the largest shows in the country. 35,000 people show up. Well, one of the things our research showed was that people who game tend to be in tech. Heavy, hardcore gamers tend to be heavy, hardcore network administrators, IT people, people who spend a lot of time with technology. And so by showing up at a gaming show as an enterprise technology company in security was enough for people to go, whoa, and then they remember you because, wow.
Yeah, what are you doing here, right? You're the only one there.
Right. So it's a great – if you see some – like a photographer showing up at a wedding show, something that allows you to at least have some spin on that, it's a great way to – because oftentimes you can get in with – you can even talk – negotiate with the trade show organizers and say, look, we've never been to this show, and you've never had anybody like us at this show. This is really experimental for us and you. Can you give us some kind of discount so that we can experiment and see if we want to come back? And oftentimes they're more than willing because you're just gravy. You just walked in off the street and they've never seen you or anybody like you before, and they're more than willing to experiment and bring some interest and excitement to their own show.
So now at Social Tech Media, what do you guys are doing for folks? Are you working primarily in the trade show space, or you do all kinds of social tech media marketing? What are you guys doing?
Well, it's interesting. So Social Tech Media, I founded Social Tech Media about 10 years ago because, you know, people are starting to ask themselves, when the financial crash happened in 2008, we saw across the board, people stopped going, trade shows just stopped, right? People didn't have travel budgets, people didn't have, and I happened to actually put on my own conference and show at that same time and got killer deals in some of the coolest cities because everybody backed out and canceled. So what happens is that people are starting to wonder, do I have the budget? I can't travel out of state. Do I go to this show? And you just talked about, which show do we go to? And shows are morphing and changing. Big ones are dying. Little ones are growing. And there's this huge transition that's happening. And so what I do is I help Social Tech Media helps companies figure out, should we be going to shows? But how do we make sure that when we go to a show, it's a bigger event than just simply showing up and hoping people randomly walk by our booth?
Uh-huh.
And that's what we do. We do that. And social media has a huge play on that. And you guys know that. By bringing the experience to the event and taking the event to the virtual audience, you make it so much bigger than it being isolated by itself.
So how many trade shows a year are you going to now?
Not too many. Let's say three. Well, now I think about it, team members coming back from one today. Now that I think about it. So let's say six. I'm going to say six. And that's a wide variety. Some education shows, technology shows, all over the country. I happen to be based in California, but California, I have a team member coming back from Texas, one going off to Washington, D.C., one going off to Germany. But about six is right about where we're at right now. And it's a wide variety. Some of these are tiny little shows, and some of these are massive, 100,000 people.
And that's for your company, or that's for your client's behalf?
That's both.
Oh, for both? Now,
for both. So, for the example, the one in Germany is for my company, because one of the things I also do is something called crowdfunding. I don't know if you guys have heard about that, but
yeah.
Great shows, there's a lot of crowds. But crowdfunding, Kickstarter, everybody's talking about that. So one of the things that Social Tech Media also does is this Kickstarter consulting, crowdfunding consulting for businesses. It tends to be for product. I want to make something and I need money for it, so can you help me figure out how to raise money for that? But sometimes you're able to actually kickstart or crowdfund your own conference, because there's so much sometimes money involved with the fear of putting on a conference. Crowdfunding is a great way, and I've seen people successfully do it, to actually get money and interest up front before you actually launch the conference. And so that's another thing that we help, how that crosses over, is that you're able to use crowdfunding, build a tribe, build fan base, leverage it, have them give you the money to do it, and then actually launch your event. These tend to be a smaller event.
Now, is there a certain industry that this works best for? Is it a technology or marketing?
No, interesting in this one, it's most of my, when it comes to that, I see most of it in board games.
Really?
Huh.
Yeah, so you know, I hear the audience doing a collective, huh? But let me give you an idea of what we're talking about. In crowdfunding, Kickstarter, for the audience that aren't familiar, Kickstarter is the largest, what we call rewards-based crowdfunding. I have a podcast where we talk about how to be successful at crowdfunding. In 2011, there were 100 projects, game projects, on Kickstarter, and they raised $2 million. People gave $2 million to help people do their own little crowdfunding. And conferences, crowdfunding conferences hadn't quite picked up. In 2012, $20 million.
Wow.
Was pledged to
Man.
Board games alone, just board games. And we're not talking about Monopoly or Scrabble or Clue. We're talking about very complex, evolved, and you can't use the term adult themed because that's a whole different connotation. But these are for serious couples, people who are looking for a social experience, and board games have really done a renaissance. So $20 million last year. This year, several projects have crossed the $1, $2, or $3 million level all by themselves, simply for a board game, raising it on crowdfunding. And now the trade show and conferences are following suit. They know they've got this audience, they're looking for a way to bring them together, so they're launching crowdfunding projects to raise money for people to come. And they're looking for between 200 and 2,000 attendees. That's about the size of the conference, maybe 500 attendees.
So now... The beauty
yeah, the
of crowdfunding for board games is you have a built-in buyers, you're pre-selling all of the board games. Isn't that what happens in those scenarios?
In what ways? Ask the question again.
That anybody who's involved in crowd selling a board game is basically pre-buying the board game before it's built.
That's correct. Primarily, that's what's going on. For example, one of my clients wanted to make little plastic sailing ships from the Napoleonic era and make it a board game, a little tabletop. You move the ships around. They're about 3 inches long and about 2 inches high, little plastic sailing ships. And you're like, well, okay. $276,000 was raised in 30 days. $276,000 was given to this company to say, that's really cool, and I know you won't be able to get that to me for a year, but let me give you my money now.
Right, here's
so
50 bucks, or
now,
here's 100 bucks,
this
right?
Cool little ship.
Wow. So there's a whole little boutique industry blossoming on board games through crowdfunding. That's amazing.
Well, it's become the top funding category on Kickstarter, because this year it's probably going to surpass $50 million alone of successful funding just around board games. And that's not even talking about the video game side, which also has its own. Yeah, and now that's spilling over into film. More and more people are doing films about board games. And so, yes. So when I talk about my niche, technology, gaming, there's all kinds of them.
Now, if somebody wanted to learn more and get a hold of the book, where would they go?
You can go to Amazon and just type in my name, Richard Bliss, or Stealing the Show. If they'd like more information, contact me. The easiest way to type in Richard Bliss on Google. I'm 9 of the 10 hits that you'll get on Google. You'll find me on Google+. You'll find me on Facebook. Again, Richard Bliss, Richard Bliss Twitter. It's Richard Bliss LinkedIn. You can find me, Richard Bliss, or you can email me the old-fashioned way, rbliss@socialtechmedia.com.
And if they wanted to learn more about social tech media, that's socialtechmedia.com?
Yep, socialtech, T-E-C-H, media.com.
Richard Bliss, thank you so much, man. I think we got to have you back on some another time because I want to dive into this crowdfunding stuff some more.
That'd be great. That'd be great. Did I do okay? You guys set me up. The previous guest, did I hold my own?
Yeah, I think you did a fantastic job, and we're looking forward to sharing it with even more listeners after this live broadcast. Well, we got to go now, but thank you so much, man.
Gentlemen, thank you for having me on the show.
Take care. All right, bye-bye. Until next time, this is Stone Payton for Lee Cantor and our producer, Kevin Finn, and everyone here at the Business Radio X family saying we'll see you next week on Trade Show Radio.
Trade Show Radio is brought to you by Radio In My Booth. For more information, go to radioinmybooth.com.